Hi, Diddly-ho, Neighborinos, and welcome into the QB List podcast. I'm lead analyst Jay Felicio, and here with me is Brett Ford, the host of tonight's festivities, and we're going to be talking about both my top 300 rankings and some drafts that Brett and I both took part of here recently within the last week or so. I was a part of the Flex League drafts in New York City, and Brett was a part of Scott Fishbowl in New York City. So, Brett, have you recovered from the train ride back and forth yet?
Yeah. I had to go see a chiropractor because my back hurt so bad after the commute. Yeah. But feeling better, things are good, and it was an awesome event. I just wish I had given myself more time in the city to hang out with you guys because it looked like a blast. I mean, it was chock full of it was a who's who of fantasy football personalities across the industry, having both the Scott Fishbowl and Flex events simultaneously in the same place. Shout out Legends. They were awesome. Shout out Ryan Hallam for organizing the Scott Fishbowl. And of course, Jake Seeley for helping out with Flex as well. It was awesome. Awesome event. And I look forward to going next year and many years after that as well.
You get that right. And you know what? I don't think we tweeted or Z'd or whatever you call it out the picture of me, you, Brian, and Mario. We have to do that. We got a QB List podcast introduction / reunion, all got to finally meet in person, which was really, really cool. And Brian is ginormous, by the way. I know it's hard to tell on these things, but yeah, he's like, put, you know, Brett and I got on each other's shoulders like Little Rascal style. We still wouldn't be as tall as Brian.
We could do two men in a trench coat and still be shorter than Brian.
Absolutely. Well, absolutely. Well, I will hand the honor over to you to run things, and you know, where you want to go first.
Beautiful. Let's, you know, the NYC event was awesome, but probably the best thing that happened on QBList.com this past week was Jay dropped his top 300 rankings for the fantasy football season 2026. He put them on Reddit.
I don't know if many people would agree with that or not. Yes.
No. I mean, we turned Reddit into Shreddit, and we went through your rankings, and
I like it.
A lot of people had something to say. Now, granted, these are not ECR rankings. Jay does not go through and just list off consensus because that would kind of defeat the purpose of the practice. So there are some lukewarm takes and some spicy takes and some nuclear reactor takes. but I'll let you decide which ones are which. And we're going to go through tonight and just kind of give Jay a chance to defend himself on some of those spicier takes. So without further ado, Jay, let's jump right into your top 300 rankings. So let's jump right in at quarterback. One of the things that I noticed about the list is that you're low on both Jalen Hurts and Bo Nix, two guys who have shown rushing ability in the past. I know that in other spots you've used quarterback rushing as justification for a higher ranking. These guys are both ranked lower than consensus. What are your thoughts on Jalen Hurts and Bo Nix?
Yeah, they both, the rushing gives both guys safe floors, but I'm really concerned about what they're going to be able to do through the air. You know, Bo Nix, I consider him a bust going into the season, and he proved me wrong because he definitely was able to have a little bit more of the deep ball, be successful, as well as, you know, although the Broncos did rush the ball a ton, J.K. Dobbins was successful. R.J. Harvey was successful for fantasy, but that's about it. And yes, they did acquire Jalen Waddle, and it's just more of, you know, Bo Nix was a top 10 fantasy quarterback, but he was a lot more volatile than people realize. He had a couple of 4-touchdown games, but he threw one or fewer touchdown in 11 games, under 250 yards in 11 games. And I am really concerned about that broken ankle that he suffered on the second to last play in the victory over the Bills in the playoffs. Not long term, but I think, you know, to start the season, he's, you know, the what made guys like him and Hurts so valuable is their ability to you know, extend plays and scramble a little bit. And Nix, I think that floor isn't going to be quite what we saw. And yes, they did trade for Jalen Waddle. That helps with the floor. Otherwise, honestly, I might have had Nix a little lower. It's just, I don't trust that those spike weeks are still going to be there, especially, you know, with the addition of Jonah Coleman. They brought back J.K. Dobbins. I think they're going to run the ball even more. And it's one of those that I'm not like necessarily down on him, but I just can't put him right back in that top 10 with all those concerns.
Yeah, I can see how the Broncos offense succeeds without Nick's necessarily succeeding in fantasy. You know, I can see how that could be a thing. Hurts, on the other hand, I feel like if in order for the Eagles offense to succeed, he needs to play well. I know you're high on Mekhi Lemon, not necessarily Devontae Smith, but we'll save that for later. how do you feel about, you know, Hurts and his effect on his ancillary pieces in that offense?
So this is why I always go back to, I don't like rankings. I prefer tiers because, yes, I do have Jalen Hurts at 12, but having tier four, which I know is low for most, but I have him in the same boat as Jackson Dart, Dak Prescott, and right, you know, the tier right behind the Drake Mays, Caleb Williams, Patrick Mahomes. So it's not like a, so when you see Hurts at 12 and you see a guy like Justin Herbert at five, I understand the concern and why it looks like I have Justin Herbert so extremely ranked higher than we see Hurts, but he's just one tier below. So for me, it's a lot closer. The thing with losing A.J. Brown, I'm really concerned about what this passing offense is going to look like. You know, Devonta Smith, I think, is a great wide receiver in the NFL. I just don't believe that he is an alpha wide receiver, what they need to be that downfield threat that at all times can just take over a game. But when you look at Hurts, he did have a career high 25 passing touchdowns last season. The weapons aren't going to be as good as they were. I mean, he's been the year before that, granted it was 15 games, but 18 touchdowns, 23 touchdowns, 22. I just don't feel like the floor is always going to be there with his rushing capabilities, but I just don't believe that he has the arm. I don't believe this is the offense that gives him the upside to jump into that top five without having a weapon like A.J. Brown on the roster.
I'm going to play devil's advocate here and give you the bull case on why Hurts is a buy low candidate this year.
Okay.
He's finished 2025 with 19, right around 19 fantasy points per game. That was QB8, right around QB8, depending on your scoring. He only had 8 rushing touchdowns. He only had 420 rushing yards. The Eagles' offense was putrid last year. It was really bad. Kevin Petullo got his dirty little mitts on it and just ruined it. Just tore it to shreds. The offensive line wasn't healthy. Just everything that could have gone wrong for that offense, except for Saquon getting hurt, did go wrong for that offense. I really think that the whole kit and caboodle could be better this year. I think that we could see Hurts get up in the double digits for rushing touchdowns again. I think that we could see a spike in passing yards with Sean Mannion calling plays. I really like what the Eagles are able to do with a healthy offensive line. Lane Johnson just came out and said he's retiring next year. But this year, man, run behind your all-generation tackle in Lane Johnson. I'm on record somewhere in one of my Saquon stands. I had a stat for the Eagles rushing yards with Lane Johnson versus without, and it's like a significant difference. So really excited for the Eagles offense as a whole. And I think that Hurts could improve upon last year's finish. I think he could get to that top five. Now, granted, he'd have to leapfrog a couple of guys. You know, a couple things would have to go right for him and wrong for others. But Hurts is a guy who, you know, you can get around QB 10, 11, 12, and I'm happy to, because I think that QB 12, I feel like you have him ranked near his floor.
Completely fair, and I would have to agree with you there. And that's the thing is, I've said this time and time again, when it comes to my rankings, I'm obviously not consensus, and I tend to value upside more than floor. So that's probably why I have Hurts a little lower than, you know, obviously lower than consensus, but even somebody who would be down on him. And I think you're right. Like, I would be more than happy to take him 10, 11, 12. Like, I think that's a great pick. I'm worried about the upside is the main thing for me. And that's why I like to go with tiers, because, you know, it, somebody sees Jackson Dart ahead of him and like, oh, you're being a homer. They're actually pretty much neck and neck for me. I just a little more upside. And I think Dart definitely has the much lower floor. But like I said, I tend to value upside.
Let's move on to running back. You've got a couple of interesting juxtapositions here with running backs, we'll call them. We'll start with Travis Etienne, whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever Etienne. His name is. I don't know. That guy that went from Jacksonville to New Orleans.
I think his nickname is Etienne, or was, so I think he can still.
I don't know if we're still allowed to even nickname him that. But he moves, you know, obviously he moves from Jacksonville. He signs in New Orleans, you know, goes back home more or less, you know, LSU guy, Louisiana guy. He is ranked what I would consider the late RB1 tier. But we recently got news that Alvin Kamara is sticking around in New Orleans. Is that going to impact your rank going forward at all? You currently have him in your third tier overall in your top 300, right around names like Christian McCaffrey, Ashton Jeanty, Saquon Barkley, Jeremiah Love. Any concerns with Etienne with Kamara sticking around, or are you all set with where you've got him and you want to keep him there?
The main concern is trying to say his name and remembering that it's Etienne or HN versus ETN. But no, I'm not really worried about Kamara. I built that into, honestly, if it wasn't for Kamara, I might have ETN or whatever we're going to call him in closer to like the top 6-7 guys, because Kamara was shot last year. And I think it's more of, they tried to get rid of him. He didn't want to leave, which good for him. Like I like a guy who is faithful to the franchise that drafted him. But I mean, last season he was 46th in yards per carry, 39th in explosive run rate, had the third lowest yards after the catch per reception. And obviously his strength has never been his actual rushing production. It's always been his work through the pass game, but even that wasn't that great last season. I think let me pull those up real quick. I mean, he had two games with five or more catches, four games with four more catches. I think, you know, Etienne is a capable pass catcher and they paid him a lot of money. I think that Kamara is going to be involved, especially on third downs, but I think it's going to be a situation where, you know, Kellen Moore isn't afraid to put two running backs on the field at the same time. I think we'll see both guys, and the money that they paid Etienne, Etienne signals to me that they want him to be the focal point for this offense, for this backfield, for this offense.
Well, based on your ranking, looks like you're going to end up with a lot of him. Have you done that so far this draft season?
Yes, I've had one draft and I do have him. It was in the Flex Leagues draft. And I can tell you real quick, guys, who I took him over. I know I got some looks, but you know, I'm the type that I'm going to draft my guys, whether I'm right, whether I'm wrong.
Was he at the 2-3 turn that you took him?
2-3 turn, I took him over Kyren Williams, Javonte Williams, Josh Jacobs, Breece Hall, and then the rest of the guys would probably be.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
Like the only one there who I might disagree with if we knew more about his legal standing was Josh Jacobs. But yeah, I'm fine with that pick.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It just, you got to believe in your guys. And that's, I'm the type that I would rather be wrong drafting guys that I believe in versus being wrong going with what ADP says or what consensus says.
Bingo.
I've done that many times and it's the worst when you watch a guy that you really wanted, but you know, chickened out and took ADP because he was supposed to go there, and watch the guy you really wanted go off. So
we'll move on to another backfield. We'll go south and look at Tampa Bay. You have Kenneth Gainwell and Bucky Irving in the same tier. We've talked at length about Irving. I just wanted to be on record to say here that that's nasty business. You ranking him behind Kenneth Gainwell. And I take offense.
I completely get it. And it hurts because I'm a Bucky. I like Bucky, but we discussed this on our one of our most recent podcasts that I really do think that Bucky is just, I don't know if it was the injury or if, you know, it was the system when having, what's his name? Liam Cohen in Tampa Bay that really just elevated him. But I think Kenneth Gainwell is just as good. And I'm really concerned with Bucky losing the goal line work to Sean Tucker, who's going to be back. I don't know why, but I'm all in on Kenneth Gainwell. He looked so good when he got the touches in Pittsburgh, and he has the same type of skill set that Bucky Irving has. I think if the Bucks were comfortable with Bucky, they wouldn't have went out and got a guy like James Conner, a guy like Kenneth Gainwell. I think it would have been a tier or two behind.
Well, I won't argue. I've already said my piece.
Yep.
We're just going
to agree. You want to hear more in-depth argument between us? Go back to, I believe it was our last. It was a,
It was one of them episodes. I'm not sure which one, but
it was recent.
Yeah. Let's look in Washington's backfield now. We'll go to the Commanders. Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt, the incumbent starter, not one, not two, not three, four tiers behind Rashad White and a tier below rookie Katron Allen. What's with the hate for GCM? I mean, we love Bill, right?
He's not good. Like, he's just not. Like, he's okay, but I feel like he's just one of those guys that got overhyped in the preseason, and people are just, it's cool to say, I'm in on Bill. I mean, the one big game that he had against the Chargers last year, if you watched the game, and I wrote this in my article, the starts and sits the week after, it was three plays that was his entire production. It was literally the exact same play. It was a counter where I think it was the tight end came across and blocked, and the Chargers defense was just nowhere to be found. And he's fast, but that's pretty much what he's got. He's got to beat a guy on the edge. And that's it. And I just don't think he's that good. I think Rashad White is decent enough that, you know, we've seen him handle a decent workload. Like, he's not a bell cow, but I think he is a capable enough runner. He's a good pass catcher that, you know, there's even some rumors that the Commanders might wind up signing. It came back to them last year.
Austin Ekeler?
Yes, Austin Ekeler. That's the name. There's even some talk that Austin Ekeler could be back, and I just think that this offense is more than anything is going to, this backfield is just going to be a big mess, and with limited touches, I don't think Bill has the skill to take advantage of it. If he was going to get, 50% of the touches, I would rank him higher, but I don't believe that's going to happen.
So what you're saying is that he's just a Bill and he'll just be sitting there on Capitol Hill.
Well done. Well done.
You like that one? That was a good one.
I do. I saw you kind of like itching to say something. That was well worth it.
Let's quit while we're ahead on running back and head to wide receiver here, where probably the hottest first round take that you have is Dallas Cowboys wide receiver CeeDee Lamb, ranked a tier above both Los Angeles Rams wide receiver Puka Nacua and Seattle Seahawks wide receiver Jaxon Smith-Njigba. Talk to me about what you like so much about CeeDee Lamb this year.
I mean, he missed, three, four games? He was banged up. When he came back, he was still able to get over 1,000 yards, and that's with having a guy like George Pickens. He only had three touchdowns. He still wound up as in half PPR. He was wide receiver 20. The talent hasn't gone anywhere. The offense is still one of the best for fantasy production. I don't understand why people are poo-pooing CeeDee Lamb. He's going into his age 27 season. The thing with JSN is I'm really concerned overall about the Seattle offense. from a fantasy perspective, you know, as bad as, not as bad, Sam Darnold was good, but he did what that offense needed him to do. And I mean, how many games was Darnold under 200 yards? I mean, 1, 2, 3, 4. He had 5 games under 200 yards. Another 1, 2, 3, 3 or 4 more under 250. It just comes down to upside, and I'm worried about the upside with the Seahawks. And I don't know, man. I know Stafford won the MVP last year. He looked great, but honestly, the whole Puka thing is more of a gut thing, that I still think he's going to be a top 10 guy, but I just have him a tier below, because I don't know if Stafford's going to hold up. You know, Puka had a bunch of off-field issues this offseason. Where's his head at right now? I mean, didn't he get charged with biting somebody or something along those lines?
Oh, like, yeah, it's not good. The whole thing is not good.
Right. Like,
talk about off-field issues.
Exactly. Like, hopefully he's gotten past that, and I do think he spent some time in rehab, so hopefully he's got those demons taken care of, but I just prefer taking a guy like CeeDee Lamb, who we know pretty much no matter the situation is going to put up top 5 numbers and is always a threat to be a wide receiver 1.
No, I like it. I faded Puka last year because of the worry that he's tied to Stafford, who has had health issues and had reported health issues going into last year. So fading Puka makes a ton of sense to me. Especially as that first round value, like, you're going to have to take him in the top 5 or 6 picks overall if you expect to get him. And I'm happy to not risk that without even looking at the off-field stuff. Now that you mentioned that's even more of a risk. I'm fine being out on Puka. JSN, I get it, could be a one-hit wonder, you know, tied to Sam Darnold. And their run game could be better this year. Who knows? But yeah, I don't hate it. I don't love it, but I don't hate it.
And I do have all those guys in the same tier. That's the thing. It's like, you see CeeDee Lamb 2, you see Puka 3, you see JSN 8. I know 3 and 8, you know, technically 5 spots, but they're close enough for me. But that's why, you know, I go back to why I prefer tiers versus rankings. And you're going to hear me say that a lot.
Well, let's talk about rookie wide receivers, Jay, because you have some that you really like.
Remember I said I like upside? That's a good part. A good point.
Super high on New Orleans Saints rookie wide receiver Jordan Tyson, Philadelphia Eagles wide receiver Mekhi Lemon, and Washington Commanders wide receiver Antonio Williams. Now, Williams may be wide receiver 3 instead of wide receiver 2 going into the year now that the Commanders have signed Stephon Diggs. So completely understandable if you backpedal from that a little bit, just because the situation has changed so drastically. But let's focus on Tyson and Lemon. What do you like about those guys? And why do you have them ranked so high?
Well, since some guy asked me to ride shotgun in the shuck truck, I got to go, you know, I think Chris Olave is obviously very talented. He put up a top 10 season last season, but I think Tyson fits what this offense is going to try to do more. And I think he's more, you know, he's a more explosive receiver, especially downfield than Olave. Olave is more than capable, but his breakout really came with the volume. And, you know, I think when you go on the depth chart, Chris Olave is going to be the wide receiver 1 for this team. But for fantasy purposes, I think Jordan Tyson is going to be the wide receiver 1 for the Saints because of the playmaking ability downfield. And that's one thing that Mr. Shuck does have, is a big arm and his ability to go downfield. And like I said, I shoot for upside, and I want the guy that's going to have those big plays. It's going to be volatile. It's going to be, you know, there's definitely going to be some down weeks, but same thing when it goes to Mekhi Lemon. It's more of, I think he fits what this offense is going to look like from a fantasy perspective. You know, that's the thing that some people still have a hard time with. I'm not saying that on an NFL football field, Mekhi Lemon is the better wide receiver than Devonta Smith. It's, I think, situationally, from a fantasy perspective, he's better suited in full PPR, which is what the rankings are, better suited for success in what I think the offense is going to be. And there was one, was there one more?
There was, but it was the situation in Washington with signing over Antonio Williams. You can talk about Antonio Williams if you want, but I figured that with the situation changing so much, really 100%. Wasn't worth it.
And that was the biggest thing, is that he, you know, had some opportunity. And I still think he's somebody that, you know, I'm going to keep an eye on. I might not. Diggs signing will probably keep me from drafting him and stashing him. Still going to keep an eye on him. You know, Terry McLaurin hasn't necessarily been the healthiest wide receiver over his career. Same thing for Diggs. You know, they're both getting a little long in the tooth. I love Antonio Williams from a dynasty perspective, and he could wind up being one of those guys that comes on at the end of the year. But yeah, you hit the nail on the head. I'll wind up dropping him a little bit with the news of Stephon Diggs signing with Washington.
All right, Jay, give me a 1-minute elevator pitch of why Jaguars wide receiver Parker Washington is two tiers below Brian Thomas Jr. and Jacoby Myers. Ready, go.
I told you this the other day, and I don't know if we said it on recording. Parker Washington really is starting to feel like Jahan Dotson from a few years ago to me. And it's not that I don't like Parker Washington. I think he's fantastic, but I'm not willing to pay the price that it's going to cost. We saw Jacoby Myers come over and immediately fit into this offense. That never happens mid-season with trades. Wide receivers generally have a hard time adjusting to a new system. Jacoby looked like he was drafted into the system and produced right away. BTJ, I still believe in. I still buy it. I think he still has that upside. The more that we see him look like his rookie self this preseason, I might even bump BTJ up even more. You know, I said, I think in one time this offseason, I said I don't necessarily believe that he still has that top 10 wide receiver upside, but I mean, he looks good. He was banged up a lot more than people realized last year. And you know, he definitely got into his head a little bit with some drops and things like that. But towards the end of the year, once he got healthy, I mean, he started making those one-handed catches, those impressive plays like he did in his rookie season. I like Parker Washington. I think that they all three have similar upside. And out of the three, I feel like Parker Washington's floor is a whole lot lower. Now, Washington's looked fantastic during training camp. It's just, I worry about the hype of such an unproven guy.
Okay. I disagree, but okay.
That's what makes it fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I will. So I jumped on the hype train of Parker Washington at the end of last season.
Can confirm.
Yeah. I like him a lot. Penn State product. Great, great athlete. And you know, the Liam Cohen offense, the Liam Cohen slot receiver has been a fantasy goldmine. It's well documented on a lot of different platforms. People have been talking about it for weeks now. And Washington is that guy, right? Like, he is your stereotypical grinder mentality, like first in the building, last one out. There's a fun soundbite of Jacoby Myers talking about, me and Brian Thomas Jr. are, you know, working hard to be the second one in the building because, you know, we're trying to beat each other into the building, but nobody's ever beating Parker Washington into the building. Right. Like, there's an actual soundbite of Jacoby Myers saying that, which is hilarious. So
it is.
I love Parker Washington, and really think that, especially in PPR formats, he could be a huge breakout this season. And I'm rooting for him because I've got a couple of his rookie autographs also. So
absolutely. At least you do for now. We'll see how much longer they stay in your possession.
Let's move on to tight end. A couple of interesting notes about the tight end position within your top 300 rankings. One of the things I noticed that I disagreed with a little bit, but I could understand, was how low you had both Tucker Kraft and George Kittle ranked from a tier perspective. Both of them come into the season carrying injury designations. Does health or camp reports entering the season change your opinion on either Tucker Kraft and or George Kittle? Like, if we get positive reports out of camp, do you see yourself moving them up a tier, maybe two?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially Kraft. And that I really had a hard time with Kraft because I do like what he's able to do in this offense, especially now that, you know, they've lost Dontavian Wicks, Romeo Doubs, and didn't they lose one more? Maybe not. Anyways, yeah, I think Kraft could very easily jump into the next tier. What did I have him in the third tier, I believe, right behind Laporta, Warren, and I know I'm higher than most on.
Yeah, he was down with guys like Isaiah Likely and Kyle Pitts.
See, you say down. Those two for me are Kyle Pitts will always have a special place in my heart. And man, the more that this offseason, he's actually, I had him in his own tier. Thank you very much. I had him in tier three. So he was a step above them. And I had a really hard time not putting him in tier two. I would not be surprised if the next iteration of these rankings come out that you would see him in tier two along the likes of Laporta, Warren, and your boy Loveland. And then who was there? There was another. Oh, Kittle.
Kittle.
Man, that substation, it's really taking guys out. Yeah.
It's in mid-season form, man.
Exactly. And I worry about the reason I kind of have him a little lower too is, you know, they're starting the season in Australia. We've seen time and time again when the San Francisco 49ers are a little more conservative with getting guys back on the field. You know, I don't think he's going to wind up starting the season on the field, especially with them starting the season in Australia. Yeah, we've seen this happen time and time again where this guy's close and then, oh, well, he's not ready for week one. And then you'll see, oh, well, you know, 3-4 weeks go by and he's still not on the field. So if by chance Kittle, you know, we get reports early enough where Kittle is going to be active week one, looking great in camp, I would probably bump him up a tier. And I wrote in my rankings too that if you can get him at any sort of discount past wide, I mean, tight end 10 or more, 100% worth the risk. And that number for me will continue to go up as long as we, you know, as his health progresses.
And then last question for the tight ends, Jay, where is my guy, Greg Dulcich? Because he could be pass catcher one in Miami this season.
Exactly. You just said it for me. That's yeah. No, thanks. I don't want pass catcher one. I don't pass catcher zero. I want no part of the Miami offense. I would take the original Achan, but not where you're going to have to draft him. So I'm just, I know you are high on Malik Willis. I am not. Yeah, that's pretty much it. I just don't want any part of this offense. That's all. He's got a fantastic mustache, great hairdo. That's about it.
I described him in my tight end sleeper article as James Franco playing Weird Al Yankovic in a biopic.
That's perfect. 100%.
But yeah, to tease our Scott Fishbowl and Flex League drafts a little bit, I stacked Malik Willis and Greg Dulcich in that league, and I'm very excited about it.
You okay? You mentioned James Franco. Are those aliens that are visiting James Franco still?
Oh, Finkel is Einhorn, and Einhorn is Finkel, and we're on the Dolphins, baby.
Yes. I got to get a Ray Finkel jersey. I've seen those online. That and that Bobby Boucher.
All right. So we've gotten through all four major fantasy positions. I did want to just kind of go through and just ask a couple of overarching questions. Sure. One of our Reddit readers, and if you guys aren't familiar, we post in r/fantasy football pretty much every major piece of content we put out is posted in that Reddit server. So make sure you check us out there. Keep an eye out for Jay, Christian, myself, all posting in there. And we try to make sure that our flair says QB list somewhere in it. So anyway, taking from, you know, our Reddit post, the comment section in there, which is always a colorful place to be.
Very much so.
One of our readers, Midget Max K, asked or wrote, curious how you have Dak outside the top 10 QB, but have both Pickens and Lamb at top 10 overall picks. Dak was fifth in total points and eighth in points per game when including his 0.7 point week 18. How do CD and Pickens both collectively outperform last year by a decent margin without Dak outperforming his last season?
So first off, I told, what was it? Midget Max K, fantastic handle, told him that they brought up a great point, and it's something that I'm going to, on this next round of my rankings and just in general that I'm going to take into account for my process. And a lot of it has to go into the whole rankings versus tiers thing. I know I keep falling back on that, but it's just how my mind works when it comes to these things. And I think having him as what, tier two, three, was it, or tier four? Tier four is not like, it sounds a lot worse than it really is, because it's, I have Josh Allen in his own tier. So it's really more aligned along the lines of a tier three. I mean, he finished what, QB 9 points per game. There is some risk with Dak with age. And, you know, it's the whole every other year thing that, you know, Dak is great one year, next year he's great, the next year he's not. So I don't know if that's actually a thing, but
I don't know, man. He's great. He's super limber in the hips. He's got that hip thing that
Did
he
you
does.
See that AI
I'm not
video?
Allowed. My chiropractor says I'm not allowed to do that without proper stretching, but he's got the thing with the hips.
And the thing that keeps him a little lower than the others is not having that rushing upside. You know, he has a little bit that it keeps him as a QB1, but, you know, that's the thing that is going to set those Lamar Jacksons, the Jaden Daniels, the Josh Allens apart, is having that rushing floor. So it's kind of like the reverse of Bo Nix, where, yeah, I guess Bo Nix and Jalen Hurts, where don't necessarily have that floor from rushing. It's more of the floor from passing, and the upside just isn't there with the rushing, especially at this age for him. I like Dak Prescott. I honestly think I'll wind up drafting a lot of him this season, but as I've said multiple times, upside is what I value most, and he doesn't necessarily have as much as some of the others around that.
The thing with Dak is that, like you said, he doesn't have that standalone value, right? He's great to stack with one or both of these wide receivers. He's outstanding when you play it like that. But there will not be a single league that I play in where I have Dak and don't have, you know, CD or Pickens first. It just doesn't make sense.
Right.
From a fantasy game, oh my gosh, what's the, just from a strategy standpoint, it doesn't make sense. So, you know, you talk about guys like Jalen Hurts, you can draft Jalen Hurts without having an Eagles pass catcher and still be okay.
100%.
Because of the rushing upside. But guys like Dak, guys like Jared Goff, like, I'm not drafting Jared Goff on any teams where I don't have one of Amon-Ra St. Brown or Sam Laporta. Like, it's just not happening. So yeah, I'm with you there, and I completely understand how, you know, one or both of those guys can go off without Dak necessarily having an incredible, like, game-breaking season.
But I
just
do,
because he doesn't have the rushing upside.
I appreciate the point that he brings up, and it's a valid one. It's a very valid one, especially having them both ranked inside the top 10. And it's, like I said, it's something I'm going to, you know, take a little longer of a look when it comes to version two of the rankings.
It's one of those things where I'd be curious to see, A, how often two wide receivers from one team have finished within the top 10, top 15, top 20, and where their quarterback ended up as well. That'd be an interesting little research project.
I like it.
Not that we have time for those. And then the last thing from Reddit, there was a user on there, and of course I didn't write down their name, but they basically said, Jay hates the Broncos. And I think it was in reaction to how low, pretty much by consensus, that you have the Broncos across the board. Do you hate the Broncos, Jay, or do you just dislike Sean Payton?
I do not hate the Broncos. It's funny. They were like, so are you a Chiefs fan? Are you a, you know, a Chargers fan? Like, no, unfortunately, I'm a Giants fan. But when it comes to the wide receivers and the running backs, it's because of Sean Payton. And we, you know, how many times did he hype up Marvin Mims? Like, how many times do we hear that? And
dude, I love me some Marvin Mims.
I do too. It's hard not to, but I don't trust him to really give us a straight shot of what we're going to be able to expect from this offense every week. And I think there's going to be, from a fantasy perspective, too much inconsistency to rank any of those guys any higher. I loved Cortland Sutton last season, but with Jalen Waddle in town now, that floor is gone. And, you know, you add Jonah Coleman to this backfield, it's going to be even more confusing. And then Evan Ingram, the Joker, whatever, you know, like, it's just, now I'm telling you,
Taysom Hill's a free agent.
Exactly. He's going to wind up there and make things even worse. And Bo Nix, I already touched on why I'm lower on him, is I'm concerned about his mobility coming back from this broken ankle. And, you know, the spike weeks, is he going to be able to replicate the spike weeks that we saw last year?
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that the only Broncos that I'll be drafting are the ones I get at a discount, which last year, J.K. Dobbins was the player that I had the most exposure to across the board through all my fantasy leagues because of the discount that we got as fantasy managers when drafting him. So if I get, you know, if I get similar things falling down the draft board, that's where I'm going to live as far as my Broncos exposure. But I'm with you. I get it. And it'll be really interesting to see how Sean Payton uses all those weapons, because Lord knows he uses all those weapons.
Very true. 100%. And yeah, I think that, I hope his ADP doesn't start shooting up, because I really, really like Jonah Coleman a lot. And I think that if everybody's still stuck on Dobbins, which rightfully so, he looked phenomenal, but as we've seen across his career, just not being able to stay on the field. I would like to, honestly, as much as I've poo-pooed RJ Harvey this offseason, I mean, if he goes late, like, I will gladly take a shot on one of those guys, because, you know, if an injury or ineffectiveness narrows down who's getting the touches, same thing with the wide receiver group. If an injury, you know, Jalen Waddle's already banged up, hopefully it's not anything too serious, but if some of those potential targets start falling off, you know, those Broncos will rise in my rankings.
Well, that does it for Jay's top 300 rankings. You can find all of the rankings, positional rankings, Jay's top 300, post-hype sleepers, my sleepers, if you're interested in reading what somebody else has to say. Who knows?
Good stuff,
too. There's going to be a ton of content, and it's all going to be packaged together in the QBL draft kit. It's not going to be behind a paywall. It's 100% free. So if you're listening on the airwaves, make sure you go to QBList.com and check out the QBL draft kit. Should be coming sometime later in August, obviously before the regular season. I'm not sure if we have an exact release date.
We're going to get it a little earlier than we have in previous seasons. So if not the end of this week, I would say no later than next week. So it should be coming out soon. I have a bunch of articles dropping this week. My fantasy grenades, my flag plants, my O-line article that I've talked about that is real. I promise you that. But had a conversation with Nick, and he had really great ideas, some additions to add to it. So that will either come out the end of this week or the beginning of next week, as well as the fantasy football, which is different from the draft kit. The draft guide, which is kind of where I go through my thought process, how I draft, and just some tips to, you know, get you thinking, not necessarily how I think, but start to think more about your process versus the end result. And that's how you get consistency as much as you're going to get in this silly little game that we play.
I love it. And keep an eye out for even more content. There's going to be some changes coming this fall. We're super excited about them. We can't wait to drop all of our stuff coming soon this August. Jay, I got to ask you a random question. I think it's my turn to ask you.
I think so. I think you're correct.
Beautiful. Great. That means I got to come up with one. Out of the standard Crayola box of 64. So like the big box of crayons that like the well-off kids had back in elementary school that mm-hmm. you had to borrow from.
Yep, absolutely.
All the time. That we both had to borrow from all the time. sorry, I didn't mean to target you with that. So the big box of crayons, right? Yep. That 64 pack. What was your favorite color in there?
I'll tell you while I try to think of my favorite color. I'll tell you exactly which one was my least favorite. Cornflower. It's like a imitation blue. Like cornflower? What kind of name is cornflower for a color? Let's see. I would probably, you know what? This came along, I don't know when it started, but when they had the silver was awesome. And it would always break. Because it felt like it was just a little softer than the others. Maybe it's whatever they put in it. I would go with either the silver or the midnight blue. One of those two are what I would have to go with. And I know this was my question, but I'd like to hear your choice as well.
I was a big electric lime guy. I love that electric lime. So I think that's why I was drawn to Cubulis, because it's in the brand guide here. But that electric lime, I think that was available. That might have only been available in the 96, though. That was really hard to find. But it was that bright, like, neon green. Mm-hmm. Oh,
like that Nike Volt color. That's one of my favorite colors. I love that.
Yes, sir. That's me. 100%. Beautiful. Well, that'll wrap it for another week of Cubulis podcast. Jay, thank you. Appreciate all the effort that you put in to these top 300 rankings. Tell the people where to find you and the rest of your work.
Yeah, you'll find me on Twitter, X, whatever the kids are calling it these days, at GMNJ. And one thing I did want to say about the rankings, I know they are a little spicy compared to most. And like you said, you know, it's because I don't go by consensus. It's just how I feel after doing my research, whether it's, you know, I'm not a film guy, I'm not a data guy. I kind of take it all into account, and some of it is also my gut. And one thing I like to try to remind people is look back, you pick any year you want. Look at the ADP from the beginning of the season, and then look at the finish at the end of the season. It's never anywhere close. And I break this down more in the draft guide, but I think the year before it was less than 50%. So it's one of those things of trying to, you know, take into account what happened in the past, and it's impossible to accurately predict the future, especially when you're taking into account, you know, guys improving year over year and injuries and things like that. So I'm not doing it just for the sake of hot takes or getting clicks or anything like that. I do genuinely have reasoning behind. I'm not saying they're right or wrong. They're probably plenty will wind up being wrong, but there's a reason, there's a method behind the madness. And especially when we post it on Reddit, I am more than happy to discuss any of it. And it don't always get to every question, because Reddit is, it gets filled up very quickly. I do my best. And as we get closer to the season, I will wind up being able to answer more and more. And then actually in season, we drop start sit every week, where I do my very best to hit almost every question. I don't hit 100%, but I'd say I probably come pretty close to 80-ish% or so.
That's the beauty of the Cubulis community, man. We're as accessible as any fantasy football pundits that are out there, for sure. So make sure you hit us up on Reddit, find us on cubulis.com, and if you're in the Pitcherless Discord, we're in there too.
Come say hi.
And also my Twitter handle is Fade That Man. Forgot to say that. Okay. All right. Well, this has been a great, great episode of the QB List Podcast Network. For Jay, I'm Brett. We'll catch you all later.
We out.